Hi, I'm Ben Scheim from Social Media Week's global team, and you're listening to the Social Media Week Glasgow podcast.
Hello, Glasgow. Thank you very much for having me. My name is Dan Biddle. I'm the social media specialist for BBC Vision, working with TV and iPlayer, which is basically anything that's on TV or online that isn't to do with the radio, isn't to do with sport, isn't to do with news, and isn't to do with children's. So about three programs. It's not a lot. So I kind of oversee and support pretty much anybody and everybody who's doing anything online with social media, from very small projects to just thinking about a Twitter feed to a larger project where somebody is thinking that they want to do some large transmedia storytelling event and really get engaged with some kind of crowdsourcing or something like that. So I work with a lot of teams, TV, editorial policy, and across the piece. I also, before this, worked as a producer. So I worked on a documentary called Virtual Revolution. I don't know if anybody saw that or got engaged with the social media that was around that project. It was an open source documentary about the web, which we did, and I'll come back into that more later. So this is a picture that I used in slides a while ago, showing you a bit of the landscape of social media that we can work with. And this is the sort of world of opportunity that you know people in this room will know about. So I'm not going to dwell a long time and tell you all about social media. And hey, you know, there's certain platforms out there. You could blog, you could tweet. That's not what I'm going to do. I'm going to tell you about what we do. But essentially, that is the same guy has just done another one of these, a new infographic. And you'll note the major change there is that the center, which was social media, then is panning out. It's now just Facebook and Google. So that's quite telling. But from my point of view, we sort of look at what can we do with social media around television programs? Because the television is that thing in the corner of the room, and the content, as we were talking about, is what we put out. That is our priority, that's our bread and butter, and that's what we do. But what can we do with the people who are talking about it? How can we engage with people further on the platforms that we've just seen, where people are? We should be reaching out to people, we should be seeing where people are, we should be talking to people, engaging, where appropriate. And so what we need to be doing is seeing that what people are doing are talking and talking and talking about stuff. It's just what was called the water cooler conversation, you know, that great Seinfeld episode. It's far more visible. It's not that people are doing something radically new. It's just that we now, as producers of television, have a massive privilege of being able to look far more at what people are saying. We're able to see what people are saying about our stuff in real time, in blogs, on Facebook, all sorts of places. And so, you know, the thing there is that it's, Clay Shirky says, behavior equals motive plus opportunity. The opportunity now to broadcast, to become a prosumer, or, you know, to become someone who broadcasts while they watch a broadcast is there, and people are just doing it. The motive, well, we have a part to play in that. If we do a really bad program, then it's likely we're going to get a lot of really bad stuff coming out of that opportunity. And the other thing is, of course, social media, it's mobile. Mobile, mobile, mobile. Every year it's the year of mobile, but, you know, it's always been the year of mobile. There's no two ways about it. Everyone keeps expecting there to be some huge flash of mobile. It's so totally there already. And, you know, social media is one great way to tap into that. These are some stats that I got from Hitwise, Robin Goad, and these are sort of just thinking about why we go to somewhere like Facebook. Why does the BBC go to Facebook on certain occasions? Why would we set up a Facebook page, an entity on Facebook? Well, you know, there's an awful lot of stats that say there's an awful lot of people on Facebook. An awful lot of our audience are demonstrably on Facebook. I'll come back to that later. And of course, just in terms of reach, which is one of our core, you know, we have to have reach, we have to have quality, we want impact, we want to give value to our audiences. But, you know, if one fan on Facebook, on a Facebook page, is worth 20 additional visits to your website over the course of a year, this was a Hitwise study that about 2 months ago they came up with that figure, then if you've got 2 million people on your Facebook page as fans, that's an awful lot of clicks coming to your content on your platform. And Twitter, these are from Twitter, and again, I agree with Mark, there's an awful lot of, Twitter is very, very sort of vocal. And it may be that there's a small number of people who are vocal. The 200 million plus accounts, I believe there's a stat that about half of those don't actually ever tweet. So, you know, we have to look at that. But nevertheless, you have to look at the fact that, again, mobile-wise, people are using Twitter in a huge way. And we can't ignore that. We can't ignore that there's loads of people talking about our content or talking about the stuff that our content will be fed by, informed by. You know, it's not necessarily going to change the way we edit something because somebody has said something on Twitter. Ooh, maybe we ought to take that out now. But it is informing our processes. It is something we can look at. And as I say, it's a privilege we didn't have before. All we had was the after-show figures. So, you know, from our war on Twitter, where this is a BBC Three documentary, which was a serious documentary following the troops out in Afghanistan, to, you know, the Doctors, which is daytime television. People are talking about this stuff all the time. Now, it doesn't mean we have to leap on and have a Twitter account for everything, but it's great to be able to see. It's great to be able to watch, as long as you take it with a pinch of salt. And there's a guy called Kevin Slaven, who's a very, very clever guy, one of these Americans who is really on it. And he's doing a thing called Starling TV, which is worth looking up, about sort of check-ins and seeing about how social television works. And he talks about limbic resonance that social media provides. And that is, limbic resonance is that sense of not being alone in the room. So whereas you used to have canned laughter on nearly every comedy show that you watched in the sort of 70s and the 80s, that was to make you feel like you weren't a total loser for laughing, or, you know, oh, it's okay to laugh. Lots of people are laughing. Well, there's a sense that now Twitter is the laughter track. You know, Twitter is the room that we are all in watching the thing. It's the drive-in movie. And whether you roll down your window and say, are you enjoying this too? Or not, and just watch it, whatever, just post and don't care if anyone reads it or not, that's fine. But there's a lot of people doing it. A lot of people doing it on Facebook as well. X Factor is a great one to watch if you want to see loads and loads and loads of channels, back channels, as we call them in the media. You know, that's where, you know, they're all over it. So how do we get involved in BBC productions? We can listen to audiences, respond to audiences, add surface area to screen, sort of the way that The Apprentice did or Strictly did with their social games. Or we can add character drama the way EastEnders do, or the way Misfits does, or the way Skins do. So you extend a fictional character onto Twitter or onto Facebook to sort of build on the canon of that, to do fictional tweets. Connecting curiosity with expertise. Mark said at the beginning, it's about connecting people, and that's what I fundamentally believe. It's about connecting people, two things. This tool connects people, and it would be remiss of us not to be connecting people, to be connecting their fascination, their curiosity with great stuff, to be connecting their passion with more stuff that's made them passionate in the first place. Collaboration and crowdsourcing. As I say, we've done a lot of stuff. I did a lot of collaboration crowdsourcing for the Virtual Revolution, Digital Revolution project. We recently ran a program called The Great British Weather, which was on BBC One, and we crowdsourced an enormous map of the UK. We've got 17,000 pictures, I believe, to sort of populate a map of the UK to show the weather at 7:30, 8 o'clock around the UK. And adding value, and I'll come to this again, that's very important. I don't like to see people not going on and doing something that's worthwhile and making it a better place. Towards that, the thing that I talk about with the BBC is a thing called the social trinity. What do you want? What do you, you know, I want to be on Twitter. I want to be on Facebook. I think we should have a blog. Why? Do you have the three things? Do you have the resource? Do you have the skills on your team? Do you have the time to train your team? Do you have the resources in the team? Have you actually budgeted for someone to look after a Twitter account or a Facebook page or a blog and all that entails? You know, this is not a one link, that'll do, I'm done for the day. This is actually something you have to go back to. This is also something you have to kind of love. And I say that to people, I say, you know, who on your team is on Twitter now? Who on your team is on Facebook now, running their own page or doing their own thing? You know, who reads blogs all the time? Because that's the kind of person, ideally, you want, rather than the sort of person who begrudgingly goes, oh, it's time to tweet. So, have you got that? Is the audience there? If you look at the platform and you see to yourself, well, the audience is maybe not talking to us. Maybe they're talking about us occasionally, or maybe they're not talking about us at all. We say, check your platform. You know, you might say Facebook is where you want to be because, you know, 20 extra hits per fan, and that's the way to go. But it might not be, it might be that Facebook isn't where people are talking about you. It might be that Twitter is actually the real-time place for you, and you should be going onto Twitter. So just evaluate the platform. It may be that a blog is where you should be. You should be writing think pieces. You should have somewhere where people can sign in and have trusted conversations on the BBC platform where there's an ID and a sign-in system. You know, just think about the audience and what's best for your audience and what's best for your content going out to them. And then what I flippantly call awesome. Because you could put content there, but you could just put content as anything. Content could be your EPG listing. Content could be the Radio Times thing that, you know, goes out and you say, tonight's show will be this, that, and the other, and that's what we're going to do. We're going to use social media as a marketing tool. Well, it works like that. It does increase reach, but your social media will need a marketing push itself, and the greatest marketing push is A, to have the audience there waiting for you, and for your content that you're giving them to be something they really want, something they really want to share, something that they will talk about with their friends and put into their social graph and, you know, will be shared on Facebook. Because, you know, on Facebook, if your page isn't, if you know, you can get a like on a page, but if your page is not subsequently liked or clicked on or read, then you will soon disappear off their top news. You will soon not be relevant to them at all. So those fans and followers will soon become a very sort of iffy number. That's the social sweet spot. This other stuff is the sweet spot of we suck. So what do? We have message boards. They still exist. They do. We do a lot of great work with message boards around learning, with Bite Size, the GCSE campaign. Loads of people come on, talk about questions, give queries. It's a wonderful community that the BBC hosts. Likewise, the parenting message board, the food message board, the points of view message board. These things are where people come and feel an incredibly strong sense of community on there, because these have been around for years and years and years. And they really get together and they really, points of view, they give us a hammering, you know, that's what it's there for. So it's there to discuss things, and we provide that place for them to come and host that, have that conversation with each other. We have blogs. We have the food blog, which is very much a sort of a conversational journalism. It's, you know, they will put up a thing. This is Dan Leopard, who is a baker, and he quite often posts about bread making and recipes like that. Strictly, so that's a big shiny floor offer, and that is huge. We have Strictly busts our sort of comments every time. You know, we've had 20,000 comments on a Strictly post, and so that's, I think that was the Matt Baker one. People really like Matt Baker. And so that allows people, we can do all sorts of teaser trailers, we can put up behind the scenes photos, we can do all sorts with that and get loads and loads of feedback from people sharing the passion with the show. I can't believe so and so went out this week. Why is so and so still in? Oh my God, next week it's got to change. Next week I'm all for it. Another one is 23 Degrees, which is a blog of a production in process. This program doesn't exist yet. It's like the Virtual Revolution. It is a production blog that's set. The 23 degrees is the tilt of the Earth, the angle at which the Earth is tilted. And we basically go around the sun at that angle, holding on for dear life. And this is following why we have all of the sort of like what are they called, equinoxes and the weather patterns and all sorts of things. And they just really wanted to record that. They wanted somewhere to have all of this information. As they film over 365 days, This amazing journey, not only for the production and the content they're creating, the stills and the shots, but the amazing journey that we're all on. So it makes sense that we could share this. And they've got like a Flickr group where people who are storm chasers, people who go surfing down like boars in the Amazon. That's boars not in the sense of me up here, but the big wave thing that happens on rivers. And you know, they've really built a great community around that. And then we've got things again like learning. A blog is a great place for learning. You can put up a piece of content, a think piece. This one here is really good because it allows students to post their work that they've done while learning English. So it could be a short story, it could be a piece of biography or something. And then the comments are back from the sort of supportive community of people also learning English. But it's also, you get comments back from the person who originally posted a blog with the sort of the teacher, if you were, the tutor, giving feedback on their blog post. So other things, we have Luther. So drama is quite an interesting one because drama has, I think drama has some very specific audience needs, and we sort of get engaged with drama in certain ways. So if you started, for instance, Twitter is maybe not so great for drama, because people tend to tweet quite ferociously, and if they're tweeting ferociously around a drama while the drama's on, there's a degree to which they're not necessarily watching the drama. What you would maybe want from Twitter is a huge spike beforehand, trending, please, where it's going, oh yeah, can't wait till Luther's on, and then, oh, you know, and then afterwards, everybody must watch Luther. We're going to go and watch Luther on catch-up. But Facebook, on the other hand, is a great place where people love to go, because you have to click like in the first instance on Facebook, and you go in and you say, I like Luther, and then people share around. So Luther, in the first series, did a TV blog, and they did a Facebook. So we have a TV blog, which is a generic blog for the BBC's television output, which also saves a program from having to have its own blog and try and set up a blog, and maybe it hasn't got an entire blog in its bag. So they can go to the TV blog and share the story. So I think it was the writer of Luther came on to the TV blog and wrote a post. And interestingly, again with the Twitter where you think, what's going on here, there was an awful lot of disparaging comments in the first sort of couple of episodes of Luther. And we were like, this is not looking good. And then gradually, Luther was a real slow burner. It was a real wait and see, wait and see. You've got to stay with this to get the full reward. And as it went on, the comments just went like that. The positivity in the comments. And by the end, by the sixth episode, people were screaming for a new series. People were all about it. Likewise, on the Facebook page, people were here to like it. People were here. And at the end of Luther, there was just a single caption that said, what's next? And then everybody was going, second series, second series, second series. And people were just sharing the fascination with Luther, the character of Luther. And that, and in that sense, you know, I think that there's a thing I mentioned today is that hate or dislike is a sprinter. And that really goes to Twitter very quickly. Oh, I hate this program. I hate this program. Turning over. Whereas love for a program is a marathon runner, and that will really see you through. The community will build and build and build. You know, there's 42,000 people now on this page. You know, it started off with zero at the time of Luther. It was a brand new series. You know, no one knew what Luther was. Luther now has gone onto Twitter, though. It's got a second series. You know, we kind of know where we are. We know what kind of thing we can do. And they are tweeting along, and they are engaging with the audience more. Because it's kind of established itself, it knows its voice, it knows its fan base is out there. EastEnders, the biggie, they have a blog with all sorts of things going on. They have a Twitter feed. They have a Facebook page. What EastEnders is able to do is also, you know, it's got over 2 million people liking its Facebook page. And they are able to interpret and see where their audience is at, where their audience is, what they're talking about. And they can then play with that. They can have a lot of fun. They can build extra content around not just a flat page where you can come and like us, we'll put up a photo and whatever. What they decided to do was, I don't know, any EastEnders fans in about the Team Amira, Team Syed and Team Christian. This was a love triangle. It was an Asian gay love triangle with this guy having an affair with the husband of Amira, who was Syed. And so we set up a Twitter page. We could see that there was a massive amount of talk around this. We could see that people really wanted to discuss it. And they were it was very divisive, you know. And so we'd set up a different page for each person and called them teams. And so you found that Team Christian, who was the sort of the guy coming into the relationship, and Team Amira got huge amounts of followings, as opposed to Team Syed, who was the kind of love rat husband, got a lot less. No one really wanted to like Team Syed. But nevertheless, it really allowed to foment another conversation around this stuff, which didn't then swamp all the other storylines. It was such a big storyline for people. And it was an incredibly busy job because of the nature of the topic. We had to, you know, moderate that a hell of a lot, and we were on it all the time. There was, you know, various comments. You'll be surprised what people are prepared to say next to a picture of their name. And then there's the extension of character, which I talked about before, the sort of transmedia or the reaching out of fictional characters. This is E20's character, Fatboy, who I believe is now into the actual main EastEnders. They tried three different fictional characters from E20, and Man Like Fatboy is the only one that really got any purchase because he kind of provides that awesome I was talking about. The other two were kind of tweeting, but they didn't really have a massive character. This guy has a really identifiable character. His tweets are funny. His tweets are irreverent. They give a sort of a really nice view askew of what's going on in Albert Square. He mentions all of the characters in Albert Square. It is canonical, so the writers oversee it, and it's very, very sort of, it's fun to watch and listen. And they've just done another one. Another team, Misfits, Channel 4, E4 Misfits, they do Twitter feeds, which are outstanding doing that. Being Human, this had a blog and a Facebook page and a Twitter feed. This had the benefit of having an established universe to play with. There's a new drama. New drama, kind of difficult. What should we do in the social space? We're going to have to promote it a lot. No one knows about it. They might hate it. They might do this, that, and the other. However, Being Human had the tropes of a werewolf, a vampire, and a ghost, which, you know, people, there's a fan base for that already. You know, we knew there was going to be a fan base for that. So we did this, and it's got a huge following. People are constantly posting on the Being Human Facebook page. The Being Human blog, you know, it reaches sort of figures of 10,000 comments on that. It's huge. And it's always trending whenever it's on TV. And what's great about the Being Human online activity and experience is that it gave the confidence for the team to say, you know what, we could do an online-only drama that's based around a blog. We could set up a mystery and a kind of puzzle piece of transmedia and social media with our blog. And so this character here was sort of in a cameo in episode 2 of season 3 of Being Human. He's a vampire. The other two, turns out that girl's a werewolf and that guy's a ghost. And we set up this whole mystery blog with an 8-part online series, which were the sort of like 5-minute episodes that happened over 8 weeks. But around that, throughout the period, we were posting up puzzles and clues. So who had killed the ghost was essentially the question that the program asked, and it's the question that the blog asked. And all the way through, we had a social media team of producers who worked very, very closely with the team making the actual content, the program. And they were, feeding red herrings. If it looked like people were getting too close, they had a bank of stuff to send one way. They had a whole load of fiction to sort of like really keep the mystery going, keep the interest going, to send, you know, extra pieces of surface area, extra dimensions for people to puzzle over and go, oh, you know, there was a video clip. CCTV clips that we asked people to piece together. Talking of puzzles, there's the code, which, did anyone see the code? Which was a Marcus de Soto mathematical thing. And it was basically the idea that we were trying to make maths accessible. The online project was about making maths interesting, maths accessible, and to sort of set people a challenge around the program. So we did a blog, we did a very big online project, we had games, and we had this code cracker type thing. And essentially, throughout the program, on our Facebook page, in our tweets, in sort of materials that the Open University did, through playing the Flash games that were on our site, which were embeddable off-site, all of these things yielded different parts of the puzzle, different parts of the code, which people had to then decode. And there was a prize at the end of this. It was all known. And so what was quite interesting was on the show themselves, they actually had a flock of starlings sort of turn into the number 6 and then fly away. And you're on Twitter, people go, my God, did you see that? Weird. The starlings turned into a 6. In fact, yes, we'd kind of done that. So off bbc.co.uk, people set up their own wiki. People set up their own Facebook page to try and crack the code, because we'd made it that it couldn't be done on its own, that it had to be done collaboratively. So they had to share different pieces of the puzzle across the way. And on the Facebook page, we released 800 postcards, individual postcards to people, each one unique. And each one had a kind of a pattern on it. And they started to realize after a while, hey, you know what I think? This is making up a shape. This is a shape. And someone went, this is the prize. Smart. Yes, it was in fact the prize. So they, you know, and they worked that out together. And this guy even mocked it up on, you know, Photoshop or whatever that is. Digital Revolution, I think I could go on about Digital Revolution for ages and ages, but one of the most interesting things for me that we did was we basically set up social bookmarking. So as part of this open documentary process, which, like 23 Degrees, we took it from the very beginning, from the very development stage. We started tweeting about it. We started blogging about it. We had Jimmy Wales come on. We were talking about Wikipedia, and we were talking about, you know, piracy. So we had Fergal Sharkey come on and talk about piracy. But in the background, as the program team, there were four episodes, and as each program team was developing and doing all of their research online, they were bookmarking it using a site called Delicious, which basically is publicly accessible. So anybody could come and see the content online that was making our program. They could come and research our program the way we were researching our program. It was also a brilliant tool for internally for the teams to just store all of their research and links. And if they found something that was relevant to another team, they handed it over. We also, I think I'm waiting to be corrected on this. I'm quite happy to be corrected. We may have been the first people to put hashtag on screen in the UK, which was great because I was allowed, myself and the producer of that, tweeted along during the Virtual Revolution when it was on TV. And so using that hashtag, and again, it was a sense of, there's a conversation. We've been online all this time, and there's going to be millions of you who just had no idea we were. Welcome to the party. Come and join it. And the great thing about the hashtag was it was kind of an in-joke. If you're not on Twitter, you don't know, well, it's all right. It was on for like 5 seconds. It's fine. And during which, on the last episode, we did a big call to action to go and do this web quiz thing, or rather a big test to see how the web is changing our mental faculties and reactions and stuff. And so many people went and did it that it fell over, which is a nice problem to have. However, it did fall over. And during which time, I did a little tweet saying that we maybe have to call it a DOS attack. And this is what happens with Twitter. I ended up in The Sun being quoted as a BBC spokesman, which made for some interesting emails in the morning, seeing as I'm not a BBC spokesman. So I'll rattle through. Springwatch does Facebook and stuff, but it has a Flickr group, which is, again, a fantastic resource for people to upload their passion. It connects with passion. It connects with the passion that's already on there. We saw that people are already photographing loads and loads of things. I mean, Flickr is where people don't just take a photograph. They tag it with the SLR camera they took it with. They love it. And likewise, these images are just amateur astrophotographers that we managed to connect with for a show that we did, a live show over 3 nights in January of this year called Stargazing Live. And we crowdsourced hundreds and thousands of pictures. And basically, this also fed into the Sky at Night community, which is obviously a long-running community, and Sky at Night, even though that program was only 3 days long. Sky at Night is 50 years old and now carries on the Flickr group. What we also did is used a tool called Cover It Live, which we're using more and more, again, to connect people's curiosity, connect people's fascination, connect people's passions to people behind the scenes who maybe aren't in front of camera following the program run, but are able to give all of the background. A bit like the Delicious Links we had on Stargazing Live, we had three astrophysicists from Jodrell Bank, where they were filming, online answering all of the questions that people were asking about what was coming up. You know, what should I do? What's that? What's this, that, and the other? And they were there. I don't know. It was all star stuff. I don't know. But, and we can also use it for lighter-hearted stuff. Lee Nelson, who is a BBC Three stand-up comedy type guy, he comes on and he web chats in character after the show. Have I got news for you? The awesome they tap into there is that they do a caption round. So they totally get the audience. They understand that the audience, when they do the missing words round, the audience is thinking missing words. Well, let's play a game every day. Let's do that. And we also will do sort of the Old Spice guy style call and response. We did this. The comedy team, whenever I talk about the Old Spice thing, they always berate me for saying we did it first. You know, we respond to loads of questions and things from Twitter, from Facebook, with this guy, Angelos, from Shooting Stars. And the other thing that we do in terms of reflecting the conversation and connecting with the audience and respecting the audience and showing that we actually are listening and we care is a thing called BBC Buzz, which I don't know if anyone's been to the program page and noticed that down here on every program page in TV and iPlayer, there is a discussion on blogs area. That pulls through using Nielsen and various moderations. It pulls through the blogs that have been written about our shows. The caveat is it has to have a comment on it. So it has to be a blog that has a social element, and it also has to include one of our, it has to have a URL that links to the program page itself. If they've got that, and it makes it through the swear filters and, you know, various things, then it comes on, and, you know, I think this is a great aspect. I'd love to see all teams using Delicious Links or something like that, so that we had the things that came at the beginning from the web that created the program, and then this is the thing that came out after the program that's now on the web. It's a sort of a permanence and a respect to people's opinions. It's all potential energy. It's, as I say, with the social media trinity, It's not for everybody. You know, I'm with Mark again. Sometimes just listen. That's all. It shows respect. Listen, watch, be curious. You don't have to set up a Twitter feed, though. You don't have to do it. So that's it. Social Trinity again. Da, da, da. And that's me. Thank you very much.